Good afternoon and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have one case on our afternoon docket for oral submission, and I understand that counsel have checked in with the clerk, and we will have the clerk call the case and we will proceed. May proceed.
May it please the court. Justice Walker, Justice Gabriel, and Justice McCoy, good to be back in front of you, I guess. We've been here before in May of 2012, I believe it was, on a temporary restraining order, an interlocutory appeal. And now we're back after the trial. So my name is Josh Northam. I represent the appellants in this case, Just for Fun Grapevine, John Limley, and Laura Limley. I have to confess to the panel, I had just a moment of panic right before you walked out because I felt like I was getting the hiccups. So I feel a little shaky. I apologize for that. I hope they don't come back. We were here before when this case was on appeal from the 16th Judicial District Court in Denton County. That case was eventually transferred from Justice Worley to the 158th in Denton County. At that time, Judge Burgess gave us leave to go to the County Court Number 2, Judge Ramirez, and have him sit for the 158th so that we could try to expedite this case to trial, as the justices will recall, because we had the restraining order pending. The appellants at that time were successful on the restraining order with a one change that this court made, striking some interlineated language, and then we moved the case to trial. Excuse me. From that point, the case eventually went to trial in May of 2013 before Judge Ramirez, sitting for the 158th. After that trial, the trial court entered a final judgment that was eventually entered on June the 12th of 2013, and he entered revised findings and conclusions following that trial in a series of hearings on July the 11th, also of last year. The judgment and its accompanying findings and conclusions are the reason that we are here before this honorable court today. We believe the trial court fundamentally misunderstood the issues of title ownership to the dinner boats that were made the subject of this suit, and that misunderstanding led the trial court to commit reversible error in two ways. First, we believe that defendant Peter Clark, that the court erred in finding that the defendant Peter Clark paid consideration for the two dinner boats to Just for Fun, who is the appellant in this case, and that error in those findings led to an improper decision on whether or not Tejas was the rightful title owners of those boats and thus were entitled to a judgment based on the lease agreement that's made the subject of this suit. That's Appendix 9. We also believe that the trial court committed reversible error even if the court finds that its decision on the title to the boat should be upheld in finding that John and Laura Limley were personally liable on the damages assessed by the trial court because their guarantee of the contract originally signed in 2008 had expired as a matter of law. We've briefed those two issues before the court in our appellant's brief and again in a reply that we filed with this honorable court. Those two issues I know were briefed in reverse order of what I'd like to argue today, and I'd first like to start with the issue of title ownership of the dinner boats. The very foundation of the trial court's judgment is that Tejas Fund, the appellee in this case, was the title owner of the dinner boats at issue in this case. From that conclusion, the trial court's judgment for damages and attorney's fees against Just for Fun and the Limleys on the lease agreement, we believe, became defective. The trial court simply got it wrong. The only way it could reach its conclusion was to find that the defendant, Peter Clark, who's also mentioned with my clients in the lawsuit, validly transferred title to the boats to the Tejas Partnership. I submit to this court that there is no evidence of a valid title transfer, either equitably or legally, that would have given Just for Fun title to those boats and thus given them a valid contract between the appellee and the appellants in this case. The original partnership agreement between Tejas Fun and Peter Clark purported to have Mr. Clark contribute those dinner boats to the Tejas Partnership. The undisputed evidence, Your Honors, at trial was that Just for Fun Grapevine, throughout the duration of its relationship with Tejas, was the title owner of those dinner boats. As late as the day of trial, both boats' titles bore the name of Just for Fun Grapevine. Under the Water Safety Act, that's prima facie proof that Just for Fun, my client, was the title owner to those boats. Both boats, from the time they were built in 2004 and the time they were originally titled, were encumbered by liens. Even at the time this litigation was filed, there were liens on the two boats, meaning that Peter Clark, who purportedly contributed them to the Tejas Partnership, couldn't have done that for Just for Fun Grapevine if they were in Just for Fun Grapevine's name and they were encumbered by liens. There was no evidence presented at the trial that those liens were ever extinguished. The undisputed evidence before the trial court was that Just for Fun built the two dinner boats with the intention that Just for Fun Grapevine would become partners in the Tejas Partnership, and the court now knows from the record that that never happened. Defendant Peter Clark admitted during trial that although Just for Fun was to have been a partner in Tejas, he decided to take the Tejas interest for himself and exclude Just for Fun Grapevine. So the boats that were originally created for the partnership, titled in Just for Fun Grapevine's name, Mr. Clark admitted at trial that he decided to take for himself, and Just for Fun Grapevine was thus excluded from the original Tejas partnership agreement. Excuse me. He decided to take that interest for himself in violation of the law. As the court well knows, according to the Canyon decision that we cited in our brief, a corporate officer can't simply take corporate property for himself without going through the proper process. His argument at trial was essentially, Your Honors, that, well, he was a two-thirds majority owner of this company, so he could take it. The undisputed testimony at trial was that there was never any sort of corporate minutes, there was no corporate resolution, and certainly there was no evidence before the trial court that Mr. Clark ever paid Just for Fun Grapevine, the title owner of those boats, for the boats themselves that would have allowed him to then take them, if you look at the record, and contribute them, as he alleges, to the Tejas Fund Partnership.
Wasn't that disputed through the evidence that he in fact credited some debt that he said Just for Fun Grapevine owed him for loans?
Well, that's what he said, Judge, but I submit to you that that testimony was no evidence of any consideration paid for the boats. And if you look at our brief, we cited to his actual testimony at the time of trial, Judge, where he said, well, they owed me some money, and he couldn't really tell us what it was for, and so I entered some entries on the books. Importantly, if the court looks at actual the QuickBooks evidence that he submitted at trial as evidence of this payment, it doesn't match the amount of consideration he was to have pledged. It doesn't match any numbers related to the cost of building the boats. There's nothing that ties this sort of post facto creation of evidence that he paid for these boats to the boats themselves, or nothing that shows that they were consideration in fact for those boats.
Were the entries dated in accordance with his story about crediting back the money?
No, sir. In fact, I tried the case at trial as well. And on cross-examination, he admitted, if you look at our brief and the specific testimony that we cited there, he admitted that the entries that he provided from the QuickBooks showed no evidence of payment for the boats. And that's cited in our brief, specifically in the record there. Mr. Clark admitted, Justice McCoy, that he could produce no document showing any payment for the barges that they could be taken by him personally. He showed the QuickBooks entries produced by him at trial showed no evidence of any consideration being paid for the boats, and they certainly weren't contemporaneous payments or contemporaneous loans at the time the boats were created, or at the time, importantly, that the partnership was formed, that would have led to even a conclusion by the trial court that that money was paid as consideration for the boats. There was no such evidence before the trial court. All you had was Mr. Clark's, at the time of trial, post facto surmise that, you know, that's what he decided he was going to take credit for the payments for.
Never any lawsuit by Just for Fun Grapevine or the Limleys against Mr. Clark for converting their property, correct?
There was not, Judge. This suit arose out of the dispute between Tejas and Just for Fun Grapevine.
So if we go forward to that dispute between Tejas and Just for Fun Grapevine, do you acknowledge that it is possible for there to be an equitable title to the boat? I know you say that there wasn't ever any title transfer, and I don't think anybody's going to argue that there was.
Yes, ma'am.
But equitable title?
No, ma'am.
You don't believe that there's such a principle?
I believe there is a principle of equitable title. Certainly, Texas law recognizes the concept of equitable title. I think if you look at the Sadiq case that's cited in our brief, there's no way that that Tejas Fund could have obtained even equitable title.
Well, if you look at the lease itself, the lease is very explicit that the boats are the sole and exclusive personal property of the lessor, and the lessee shall have no right, title, or interest in the boats. And the appellant in this matter was paying rent for a boat that you say they owned.
That's correct.
All those things seem to indicate that, in fact, equitable title was with the lessor?
I don't believe so, Justice Gabriel, respectfully. I believe that the test for establishing equitable title is undermined by the fact that Tejas and Mr. Clark, who purportedly contributed these boats, didn't complete the transaction even under the partnership agreement, if you look at it, that then led to Tejas being the alleged owner of these boats.
Signed these leases that said that they shall have no right, title, or interest in those boats.
Just for Fun Grapevine signed that lease under the mistaken belief, frankly, Judge, that they did not own the boats. And the discovery that they didn't own the boats came to light in 2011, and this litigation ensued. I understand the question, and I think it's a valid question, but they didn't have the opportunity under Mr. Clark's control. If you look at Mr. Limley's testimony under Volume 2 of the record, and then his later testimony in Volume 3, he didn't have the opportunity to discover the title ownership of the boats. Mr. Clark never demanded titles be transferred from Just for Fun Grapevine. Tejas never demanded that the titles be transferred from Just for Fun Grapevine. They didn't take any of the actions that a normal person, I believe, would take, especially if they're trying to act in equity, to preserve their interest in these boats. They didn't do any of that. They didn't even raise the issue of title, Your Honors, until 2011, when the Limleys, acting as the corporate officers of Just for Fun Grapevine, figured out that Pete Clark had never, in fact, paid for these boats. And then this litigation obviously ensued. As a result of that, Judge Worley granted a temporary restraining order maintaining the status quo, which was that our clients had the boats and had operated them up until the litigation ensued in 2011. Under the Sadiq case, Justice Gabriel, they have to have paid consideration for the boats and then done what was necessary to complete their actions under the agreement. In this case, if you look at the partnership agreement, where Mr. Clark allegedly contributed these boats to Tejas Fund, first of all, the agreement says a Clark boat. The dispute here is two boats, so there's vagueness in the agreement to begin with. But more importantly, Judge, it requires that Clark provide a bill of sale to Tejas for the transfer of this property. The partnership agreement doesn't transfer title. It just gives the parties the mechanism by which Tejas would have obtained the title to these boats and accepted the contribution. The very terms of their agreement required them to submit a bill of sale, which all of the parties who testified at this trial admit never happened. Mr. Clark admits there was never a bill of sale. Mr. Limley, once he got his hands on the books of the partnership, of the corporation, admit there's no bill of sale. Tejas again admitted that it never received a bill of sale.
Say Mr. Limley, when he got his hands on the books, didn't Mr. Limley buy out Mr. Clark like back in 2007?
2008.
Yeah, okay, 2008.
Yes.
But it took him until 2011 to get his hands on the books?
Well, to discover the issue of the title when it was first raised in 2011 by Tejas, that's correct.
Can we quickly move to the guarantee question?
Yes, sir.
All right. If we look at the lease renewal agreement.
Yes, sir.
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. If we look at paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, it's going to say that the lessor and the lessee confirm and ratify the terms, conditions, and covenants of the 2008 lease. The lease agreement is valid and presently in force and effect. The lessor and the lessee agree the terms of this lease agreement include all amendment and previous renewals, blah, blah, blah. So I assume what you're saying is that the lease agreement, the terms, conditions, and covenant is one thing, and the guarantee is completely separate.
Absolutely. I think
I'm
sorry, Judge.
So the lease agreement, the terms, conditions, and covenants is renewed, but the guarantee is a separate item.
I believe that's absolutely correct.
All right, so that's the question to the court. Is the guarantee of the original lease something separate and apart from the renewals of the terms, conditions, and covenants?
I believe absolutely, Judge, and I believe that's the case because they made them separate agreements. I think if you look at this very court's opinion in the Centerpoint Apartments case, this court has passed on that very issue. When you had a right to an automatic renewal and you create a new document, if you look at appendices 6, 7, and 8, which are the renewal agreements, those renewal agreements establish a new term outside of an automatic renewal. They establish separate consideration. They say that they're the same except for the terms below. And if you look at the terms below, Justice McCoy, in each of those lease renewals, there is no guarantee included.
Well, I guess what you would further say would be, how would you address the fact, let me put it this way, how would you address the fact that these then even needed to be signed?
I don't think I understand the question.
If it's the terms, conditions, never mind. I've just answered my own question in my own mind. Strike that from the record, Bonnie.
Okay. Your Honors, I believe my time has expired. Unless there are further questions, I'll yield to Mr. Witten.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
I want to talk about the guarantee first, if that's okay, but I'll talk about the title, whichever y'all prefer.
Do you agree that the question before the court is, do the terms, conditions, and covenants that are renewed include or not include the guarantee?
Yes.
Is that the question?
That's the question.
Okay.
That's the question.
We need to isolate the question first before we...
If you look at the
answer.
Dinner boat lease. Go to the bottom of it here. Let me see.
Hard copy is a good thing.
Anyway, it's basically all one document. It's signed by Tejas Fund LP, a Texas limited partnership, by Jeff Rose. And it's signed for Just for Fun Grapevine, Inc. by John Limley, Vice President, Secretary of Treasurer. And then it says, personal guarantor by John Limley, date of execution 425-08, and by Laura Limley, 425-08. That's the sum total of the guarantee. There's not a separate document like you might see if you go guarantee somebody's note at the bank.
Well, is this a term, a condition, or a covenant? Because that's the three things that are renewed.
I believe it's a, what you call it, a term or condition. I think it could be characterized either as a term or a condition, because if you go back and look at the testimony, Mr. Funk, who was the principal in Tejas, he had done business with Mr. Clark for some time. They didn't need any personal guarantees, but when it came time when Mr. and Ms. Limley were going to buy out Mr. and Ms. Clark and enter into this 2008 lease, he didn't feel particularly good about it and wanted it guaranteed, and that was essential to him agreeing to that lease.
Is there any reference in the lease body itself, which would be a term, condition, or covenant, that references a guarantor?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe so. Apparently they took the 2004 lease. The only thing they changed, I think, was basically instead of a percentage lease, it became a flat rate lease, and put different names at the bottom of it.
There is a provision in the 2008 lease that it will be automatically renewed on a yearly basis.
Yes, I believe this lease never expired. There's never really... a new lease, or certainly no new terms of any lease. If you look at the renewal agreements, they say that they confirm and ratify, except as modified below, all of the terms, conditions, and covenants in that certain written lease. Well, there's not any terms, conditions, or covenants. You know, if it's got to be in the body of the lease, then they're confirming the essence of the lease.
The term that was modified was the term of the lease, correct?
No, because the lease said unless somebody gives 60 days notice before the expiration of the lease, it automatically renews.
Okay, but so, your position in your brief, at least, was that those lease renewals were unnecessary and that they simply operated as memorializations of what was happening under the lease. But if that is in fact the case, then why is there new consideration for each of these subsequent renewals? If it automatically renews, there doesn't need to be new consideration for these subsequent contracts.
If we consider a dollar, I don't know what other consideration there would be.
Well, there's major contracts we all know that recite the consideration to be a dollar. So the amount of the consideration isn't really a factor, is it?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I would think it probably is not essential to it. But this lease renewal agreement was already automatically renewed, because if you look at the dates on these lease renewal agreements, the lease has already been automatically renewed. There was no necessity for these whatsoever. I have no idea why the parties did what they did. There was no testimony at trial that explained this.
So under the rules of construction, aren't we to assume that they were entered into because, in fact, they did mean something? If it was unnecessary to do it, then they were entered into because they did mean something.
I don't think you can draw that conclusion, Judge. I think you can draw the conclusion that these are laymen acknowledging what's already happened. I mean, there's nothing in here. The lessee warrants that it is accepted and is now in possession of the demise premises. Well, it had never been out of possession of the demise premises. They had those boats all along, and the lease agreement is valid presently in full force and effect. That's talking about the 2008 lease, not this renewal. And the only thing they say is that they're extending it for 12 months. Well, it's already been extended by operation of the language in that lease. We think that the lease by Mr. And Ms. Limley was an unconditional guarantee. They admit on page 15 of their brief that the 2008 dinner boat contract is unambiguous. They admit that the Limleys personally guaranteed that agreement. They argue that the principle of strictissimi juris, which I love these Latin terms, means it has to be strictly construed in favor of the guarantor. Call the court's attention to JMW Partners versus North Star Bank, 02-09-167 CV, an opinion by Justice Gardner. She noted that principle only applies when there's an ambiguity. Otherwise, the ordinary rules of construction are applicable. Well, I don't think either party's ever contended that this is ambiguous. And she cited to the Coker case, which is, I think, both parties cited. But we hadn't cited that case in our brief. We just found it. But I think it explains it. Look at the Webb case. Or I guess that's the Center Point Apartments case. Here, Mr. Webb guarantees his brother's apartment lease. And they come along, and then the brother signs a new lease with a different term of lease and different consideration, different rent. And the brother subsequently defaults, doesn't pay his rent, and they come after Big Brother to pay. And they said, if the original lease had not been modified, if there hadn't been a second lease which changed material terms of the deal, then Mr. Webb would be responsible under the guarantee. But since they did that, That relieved him of his responsibility. There's three things that you've got to do to escape from the effects of a guarantee. There's got to be, to be entitled to a discharge from liability on the guarantor must prove a material alteration of the underlying contract made without the guarantor's consent, which is to the guarantor's detriment. I do not see what material alteration there is, since the only change or acknowledgement of any different term would be that, well, we're going from 2008 to 2009, we're going from 2009 to 2010. But that's already in the lease. So we believe that guarantee never changed. Nothing required them to pay any more money. Nothing required them to treat the boats any differently than they did under the 2008 lease. It's an extensive lease. None of that changed. So the execution of these lease renewal agreements, in my opinion, is you know, just something they didn't need to do, and I don't think it has the legal effect of making a material change in their guarantee agreement. You can also argue, I think, since that guarantee is one paragraph at the bottom of the lease, that is part of the lease. That is a term. You can say, well, it's got to be above the signature or below the signature, but I think if it was the essence of the deal, it's a term. With regard to the title question, I mean, Judge Gabriel, you've got it exactly right. This is simply a matter of equitable title. Clark agreed to contribute those dinner boats. What his deal with Mr. Limley was, or whether he did or did not do something that's not strictly according to corporate oil in transferring, what does that have to do with us? He never sued Mr. Clark, never attempted to get a judgment against him. In terms of receiving those boats and making them part of the Tejas, what Tejas owned, I think the lease agreement covers it. It says it's our property. They don't have any interest in it. Also, when Mr. Clark bought out, I mean, when Mr. Limley bought out Mr. Clark, those boats were not included in the inventory of boats that went to that, not at all. So it wasn't anything that he bought from Mr. Clark, and he knew that back at the time. Anything else? I'll be happy to answer any questions, but I think I've covered what I want to cover.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Jay.
Yes, please, rebuttal.
How do you respond basically to his argument that these renewals are sort of surplusage? They're unneeded because the terms of the original 2008 lease just call for an automatic renewal, hence this is meaningless.
I think under Coker, Justice McCoy, that's exactly right. If you render them, I mean, if you give them no effect, they would be surplusage. They clearly are there for a reason. Coker says you have to give them meaning if they exist.
And what is that reason?
It was to remove the guarantee, we believe. And to change the term. That term was originally in 2008 an automatic renewal. They changed it to a date certain term in each of those three subsequent renewals. Coker says we have to give those effect. They cited separate consideration, Justice McCoy. Again, if they had intended for it to be simply a memorandum of the 2008 lease, they wouldn't have needed separate consideration. And they would have had the Limley sign it again if it was simply memorializing what was already done in 2008. Clearly, those lease renewal agreements were meant to remove that guarantee. I think there's no other way to read them other than the separately cited consideration and the change of the term to a date certain, and the removal of the guarantee was their very purpose. Otherwise, we wouldn't need them. And Coker says we can't just ignore the fact that they're there.
What consideration did Tejas receive for the removal of the personal guarantee by the Limleys?
Say that again, Judge.
Okay. It seems to me there's a material, this would be a material change in the contract in that there's no longer a personal guarantee, which is a significant issue.
Yes, sir.
What is, if this was the purpose of the renewal, what did Tejas receive in exchange for allowing Limley to step away from the guarantee?
I think they received a change in the agreement from an automatic renewal to a term for a date certain. Their $1 consideration is recited in the agreement, as Justice Gabriel says. I don't think we're allowed to inquire into the adequacy of that consideration if they've made it a recital in the renewals. And as a result of that, I mean, again, Justice McCoy, if they had the automatic renewal in the 2008 lease and nothing changed, why have the renewal agreements? The law says that we have to give those effect. The effect of those, if you look, according to their plain language, is to renew except what has changed. Well, except what has changed is the personal guarantee agreement. If you look, these agreements are only signed between the lessor and the lessee. They don't mention any guarantors. And if you look at the bottom, there's no signature page for the guarantors. I think on their face, they exclude the personal guarantee of the Limleys. Justice McCoy, I think if you look at the CenterPoint case that this court decided in 2008, it's analogous. That was a automatic renewal lease that was then transformed into a renewed lease for a date certain. They didn't call it a renewal in that particular case. They just called it lease two. I think Your Honor may have even sat on that panel, and y'all decided in that case that the fact that there was a renewal there had to be given effect, and the effect of it was to destroy the personal guarantee on, in that case, lease number one, as they called it, over to lease number two. That was exactly the holding in that case. And then finally, I would just say to Your Honors, with the, that little yellow light makes me nervous, with the effect or with regard to the issue of title, based on what Mr. Witten was saying about the title themselves, again, if you look at the case law, equitable title can only pass when Tejas has done what it was required to do. The burden was on Tejas in this case to prove that they were the title owners to this property, to these two particular boats, and I believe that there is no evidence before the trial court that in fact they ever received those titles or that Peter Clark ever paid any consideration for them. That's Tejas's burden, not ours, and I think what they are attempting to do by their argument is to shift that burden back to Just for Fun Grapevine. The court will recall, based on the evidence, we were the title owners until trial, and the court ruled otherwise. We brought our claim for the superior right to those titles within the limitations period, so it was Tejas's burden to prove that they were the owners, and there's no evidence before this court other than the self-serving speculation of Mr. Clark that any consideration was ever paid. And I believe that undermines the agreement between Tejas and Just for Fun. Thank the court for your time.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you so much for your argument here today and for your briefing. It's been very helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and we will be adjourned.